everyone. I'm Natalie Gochner. This is Both Sides of the Aisle, and this is a special edition of the program because we're celebrating Utah on Pioneer Day week. Shireen Gorbani joins
me
on the left.
You're settling the podcast. Huh?
Yes, and I think I'm also the newest Utahn at the table.
Yeah, and then I'm the only homegrown Utahn at the table. Yeah. We got John Dougal on the right.
Yeah, my family's from here. My parents grew up in Utah, but I was born in Southern Cal, grew up in Portland, Oregon.
Yeah.
Hey, before we get in the heavy stuff, let me quiz you guys a little bit.
Okay.
John, what's our state motto?
A life elevated.
Okay, good. Shireen, do you like that motto?
It could be time for a refresh.
Okay. Shireen, do you know what the state tree is?
Okay, I think it is an aspen, but is it a quaking?
Yeah, it's a quaking aspen. And why would that be? Why would you toss out? Yeah, tell our listeners about Pando.
Okay, so Pando is, I might get this wrong, but I think it's one of the largest living organisms on Earth.
That's right.
It's a connected being of trees, and it is up by Fish Lake. It is not a far drive from Salt Lake County, depending on where you're listening in the state. I'll just say, I one day spent Mother's Day sitting on the edge of Fish Lake on the edge of Pando, and it was a wonderful day.
I love that.
And I think it used to be the blue spruce, and we kicked it out because it was like Colorado blue spruce.
Well, that goes to my next question. Why is the California gull our state bird? Why would you pick a bird that had another state's name in it, John?
Because of the crickets. Because of the crickets. You know, the story all goes back to, you know, the crickets saved the crops and the pioneers survived.
Yeah. Do either of you know how Utah got its name?
Utes.
Indians.
Indigenous. Yeah.
Derived from the name of the Ute tribe. The name Ute means people of the mountains.
Yeah.
Which I love. Mountain basketball, mountain people, all those kinds of things. How about the Wasatch? What is the Wasatch? What is the Wasatch Range? Where does it go? Why is it a big deal?
Okay. So I'm guessing the name is also indigenous, but I'm not exactly sure. But I know that it's much bigger than we think. Mm-hmm. I kind of think about it as a resident of Salt Lake, that it's right here along
Salt Lake
County. But it actually stretches, what has it got to be, like over a third of the state.
Yeah, and goes all the way up to the Idaho border.
Yeah.
160 miles, apparently.
Keeps going right down past Provo and keeps going south. So
Yeah.
And then we got the front and we got the back.
Yeah. Those are all good ideas. You learn the front, you learn the back.
A lot of folks don't
some of you know the Ochre Mountains. These are the ones where Rio Tinto's mine is and everything.
Out on the west side of the valley.
Do you know what ochre means?
Oh, shoot. I don't know.
First light.
Oh, yes.
Okay. Does that sound right? Is that how you?
I think it is.
Because the sun comes up, it hits there first.
It hits it.
Pops over the
Wasatch.
I think it's a really beautiful metaphor for, you know, I don't know, first light is something neat.
It's one of my favorite words that people encounter here, like Tooele. I love it when people see ochre and they...
Oh, can't
trepidatious.
Yeah.
I just want to let our listeners know, Natalie has her cheat sheet right here. She's quizzing us.
I have a cheat sheet of fun facts about Utah. Well, a fun thing to do on the week of celebrating our state's history. One last one. Why are we the beehive state? Where does that come from?
Okay.
Newcomers going, most newcomers.
I think you can tell me this, but my understanding from taking a tour of the Beehive House on Temple Square is that it has to do with the community-minded industriousness of bees and that connection to Mormon history. And now I will say on the tour, I said, no, the interesting thing about that is pretty last time I checked, I think a woman was in charge in a beehive, to which crickets, but maybe a California gull.
Mike Shireen with the mic drop every single time.
Is that true?
Yes.
Is that true? That's what it comes from?
That is my understanding. It's that
industry.
Industriousness.
Industry.
It means industry. And I love it as a state symbol, but I love your point, Shireen, because we all know that, and I love how bees, you know, they colonize and they do things together, but you're absolutely right.
And
the
order.
Queen bee runs it.
Right. But it also has to do with order, the orderly nature. I remember I listened.
Yeah, very good. Okay, well,
this is us working together to answer the questions.
To answer the questions.
I have more on my cheat sheet, but we'll leave it at that and go to some more kind of issue-oriented things.
I get a couple, though.
Okay.
Population of Utah.
3.5 million.
Yeah.
About 3.5 million, yeah. I think we know this, but how many representatives do we have in Congress?
Six.
We have four in the House and two in the Senate.
Yep, of course. Everyone gets two, but we have two in the Senate, but we do have four. I was like, what is our uninsured population?
I don't know. I'm going to go 12%.
It's right around there. Yep.
Good.
Bring it to the economist.
Make me feel good.
Down,
yeah.
So.
Make me feel good. I'm more comfortable with like unemployment rate and things like that, but I can do the uninsured. Okay, very good. Anyway. John, do you have any questions for us?
No, but I was just going to say one of the beautiful things with this holiday, you know, Independence Day is freedom to govern ourselves. And I look at the 24th is when we basically celebrate a set of people who were suffering from religious persecution, who had the dream of what the Constitution meant and felt like it wasn't meeting their needs. And they were fleeing the country to be in a safer place. And then shortly after that, turned right back in the U.S.
I don't think I've shared it with either of you, but I have a heritage that goes back to these days. My great-great-grandfather was in the Vanguard Company, so the first group that came into the Valley. His name was Major Howard Egan, and he became one of the, the forerunners of the Pony Express. And so he planned the route from central Utah to central Nevada.
Well, and think about the Pony Express. My family's Express famous is for that. Amazing thing. It only lasted for like, a year and a half.
Yeah. Yeah. That's my family history. All my greats.
Because then the train
were
came
either
along.
Riders or started it. And that's in my heritage. So
interesting.
Fun.
Interesting.
Okay. Well, in this, I want to talk a little bit about the future and Utah and what's going on. And
what are we doing well? What's going on?
Yeah. That's where you start. It's like, what's the baseline? And part of why I want to do that is that we have the Olympics coming in 2034, and I can't think of a better point
of leverage.
Oh, come on. Been there, done that. Well, I can't think of a better point of leverage for us to do right by our state than to use the Olympics to, get better. But what do we do well? And I've coined it the Magnificent Seven. Shereen, do you know that term, the Mag Seven? Does that mean something to you?
Well, yes. But
and does it to you, John?
It comes out of the Seven Samurai, but yeah, keep going.
Okay, it's a movie. That's not where I'm coming from. Okay, the Mag Seven to me are the seven tech stocks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about that Western, but
NVIDIA,
it came out of Seven Samurai. That
Alphabet.
Adapted,
yeah. Anyway. So Mag 7. It's just a term, but there's some things we do really well. And I just want to. What do you guys think we do well? And see if it matches my list at all.
Well, economically, we've been a really strong.
The strongest state economy in 2024.
Yep, and it's been that for many years. One of the key things is last I heard, we were the last upwardly mobile state. Uh-huh. Many other states, you're basically stagnant. Where you're born, where you graduate from college, you basically stick there.
Or you decline.
Or you decline. Where here, you can start off poor and move up that economic ladder.
That's on my list. Shereen, you got another one?
Well, I know, I don't think this is on your list, but engagement, volunteerism.
Oh, it is on my list because this is social capital to me.
Okay.
Social capital's on the list. Networks of trust.
Networks of trust.
Yeah.
Which can also actually be an area of risk for us. We know that people get conned in the state. We know that people get into they can get into difficult financial straits because of trust.
Yeah. Well, I want to double down on that because there's also in social capital work, there's what they call bonding social capital and bridging social capital. Mm-hmm. And bonding's when you're all alike and you bond and grow together. And bridging's when you go across socioeconomic class or religious affiliation and things. And we can have a problem in this state where we're really big on the bonding and we forget to bridge. So interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Before you go.
Oh, yeah.
But one of the things, bridging, I think at least for the LDS Church, there's a lot of that bridging just partly because of how they do their congregations. Mm-hmm. Is there by geographic area rather than here's where I want to go.
Mm-hmm.
So you can get some of that bridging here that you might not see in some other places.
Yeah, that's fair. Also on my list, you've covered a lot of them, but we have the lowest poverty rate in the country. That's something. And when we adjust for cost of living, we have the highest household income of any state now. That's special. Yeah, that's new. That probably surprises John.
Surprises
he's been around this state
a lot.
Yeah.
But you also say when you adjust for cost of living.
Yeah. And then, John, you sort of mentioned this, but also on my list is income equality. So we always talk about inequality, but we can actually measure how is that distribution by something called the Gini coefficient? And we have the lowest, which means the best, if you care about income equality, Gini coefficient among any state. Wow.
Yeah, we group closer to, generally people are making closer than massive swings.
Yeah. Okay. So those are some really big things.
Right. And we want to keep doing those.
Yeah, but the challenge is, and we push some of this to the second, but just to set up the challenge is Utah's changing incredibly fast.
Yeah.
Incredibly fast.
Yeah.
So we've had 33 of 35 years of net in-migration. That's new, proclivities, new Utahns here.
Well, partly new Utahns. Some of that is Utahns that left and I think are coming back,
For sure. But think of it. They left and they experienced
something. They left in the 80s and there was no job.
They changed.
Yeah.
They saw the world maybe in a different way. So I think that's still really interesting. Let me share a stat with you that I think you'll find interesting. In 2007, Utah ceased to be a LDS majority state.
Yeah.
Interesting, right? So we're now 42% LDS affiliation. That doesn't mean activity. It just means you're on the records. Whereas recently, as 2007, that was 50%. And where we see that...
So wait, I say it again. So
50%
when did we become non-majority?
2007. Okay. So we're just under 50% in 2007, and now we're down to 42.
Yeah.
And then if you look at our fertility rate data, you really start to see that because we've fallen from first highest fertility rate to 10th.
Ooh. Yeah.
10th. Yeah. That's a big drop.
I mean,
it's not second
people,
or third.
I like
yeah.
to remind people part of the reason that the state that I'm from has jumped ahead of us and South Dakota is because of teen pregnancy. So, I mean, good that we're not blowing them out of the water by young folks, maybe unplanned, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah, yeah.
Something to consider.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay. Well, so in the second segment, what we'll talk about, we talked about what we're good at. We talked about how we're changing fast. We're going to talk about what's troubling to our state. Does that sound like a good plan?
Yeah.
Certainly.
Okay. But we'll try to do it with a little positivity. So stick with us.
Yeah, you got it. All right. Natalie Gochner with Shereen Gorvani and John Doolittle. Stay tuned, everyone. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on UPR. We love to hear from listeners like you. If you would like to send us a comment, email bsotapodcast@gmail.com. That's bsotapodcast@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.
Shereen Gorvani on the left.
John Doolittle on the right.
Natalie Gochner in the political center. And this is Both Sides of the Aisle. I need to get nicknames for the two of you. And I think my nickname
like
for John's going to be Jonathan.
I'm not a Jonathan. I'm just only John. And, or you can call me Frugal.
And Shereen, I'm going to call the artiste. Because she's so artful in her communications and in her recall. And there's something about saying artiste that makes it sound very...
Well, do you have a nickname? Thank you. Do you have a nickname?
Do you know, my dad nicknamed me Boot.
Boot.
Boots.
Yeah, and it worked for soccer because, you know, you put on your boots. It was short for beautiful to my dad.
Oh,
I don't claim that, but that's what he was doing.
Not often, but my favorite nickname that people don't call me very rarely is Gorbs. So, like, my last name is Gorvani, and for
Gorbs.
Whatever reason,
yeah.
I like when people call
like
me
Gorbs.
Like,
I could be Gawk.
But you
could be
Gawk.
Yeah.
Gorbs and Gawk.
Oh, great. Sounds like a new
show.
Well, it sounds like a trail mix.
Maybe it should be a podcast.
All right. Yeah. So we're trying to keep it light because we're going to talk about troubling, maybe the troubling seven or just the troubling issues facing a state that's changing so fast, these potential risky areas.
Okay.
And you guys can lead this, but it's going to be top on everybody's list, housing affordability.
Housing affordability.
Is it not?
Uh-huh. Absolutely. Yep.
Just the data there. Our current single family home median sales price is $548,000, making us the 9th most expensive housing market in the country by that measure.
Yeah.
Median family home price.
And that is not what you would just expect when you're just looking at a map.
Yeah.
You know. No.
We had an analyst here at the Gardner Institute, Dayan Eskich. He calculated the percent increase in the housing price index, you know, from 1991 to 2024. So a long time frame, but kind of, you know, like in our current life period, Utah had the highest increase of any state. Ouch.
Interesting. And it's a beautiful state with lots of people moving here. 10 years ago, I went to a high school reunion. A good buddy of mine, a Jewish kid from Portland. I'm like, where are you living? I'm living in Utah. Oh, really? How did you end up
in Utah?
Here? You know, it's one of those, we love skiing there. And, and then, you know, I can travel all over the world for work. So it was just a nice central place and we just loved it.
Yeah. Interesting.
So you look at him, it's just an example of more and more people moving here because they recognize it's a beautiful state to recreate, to work, to so forth.
Shereen, what's the call to action?
Around housing.
Yeah.
So I have to say, this is one that is near and dear to my heart because especially serving in county government, many decisions around land use are happening at the municipal level, but in some of our communities, they're happening at the county level just because of more rural places. If you're concerned about this, and I think we all should be, really supporting, you know, housing policy, and I know this sounds so nerdy, but letting your city council member know, letting your county council know that housing affordability is a priority to you, when you see folks mobilizing to bat down developments, really approach that with, I understand, you know, the strain that people have. I was sitting in traffic just last night in West Valley City. I get, you know, the concerns that people have about quality of life related to increasing housing. But it is access to housing and that ability to move into the housing market is one of the biggest drivers for economic growth, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
When we think about families being able to grow from economic mobility, investment in wealth, having a home is such a defining factor. If we care about keeping our economy strong, keeping our family strong, we have to have affordable housing, and your local elected leaders need to know.
And part of what you're saying is pass local ordinances, zoning laws that enable more housing choice.
More housing choice.
Yeah.
I'm going to say one of the other key things is recognize the dignity of work. For too long, too many people have looked down and said, okay, I'm white collar, I'm good, blue collar, you know, that's, you know, not at the level I am. And I look at all work as important and should be respected regardless.
And paid.
And so many of these that are blue collar workers that are out there doing jobs that I wouldn't be able to do. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be able to survive the heat or other things like that. Yeah. And I look at that and their dedication. So we need to respect all folks.
Well, part of that is saying pay them what they deserve so that they can afford this. Interesting.
And realize that a lot of the folks doing manual labor around housing are folks who may be here on an undocumented status.
My call to action, I'm taking a labor approach as well, but a little different angle. I'm calling upon our congressional delegation to get us immigration reform that gets us the workforce that allows us to build these homes in the quantity and price points that we need.
Mm-hmm. And quality.
Yeah. Okay. Let's do another one. How about public education? But I'm going to pick one issue in public education. I'm going to pick third grade reading.
Oh, wow.
And why did you pick that?
Because it's stunning. Because we want to have 70% of Utahns reading at grade level, and we're at about 47%. It's abysmal.
It is abysmal. And we talk about how it's so fundamental, and yet we've been fighting this battle for decades and really haven't moved the mark.
Well, and if you look at it by race, ethnicity, by socioeconomic status, or by school district, so geography, economics, or race, ethnicity, we have incredible disparities. Mm-hmm. It's just, we're not doing very well.
No.
So you guys like my problem. What's your call to action?
Okay, I have two. One on the personal level. If you have the ability to get engaged, like, for example, the United Way does reading programs, you can get involved in your community around reading, and especially reading to youth. I will just add that there's a layer of frustration that I have with the way that our state has become incredibly hostile to books generally. And I would rather have an engaged reader. I'm really lucky to have raised a reader than to be having these fights about, you know, what kind of books people can have access to in schools.
Yeah. John, do you have a call to action on third grade reading? John knows a lot about this, if you don't know that, Shireen. He's an education guru.
Well, my concern is we talk so much how reading is fundamental, and yet when we structure the school day and everything else like that, it's like just this small segment. Mm-hmm. And then when we go all the way upstream to, you know, families and what reading takes place in the homes and the importance of reading, I think we need to look at this as multifaceted, and we need to, whether it's families, whether it's in the schools, whether it's volunteers helping in the schools, whatever it might be, to really focus on, okay, what is important? Because let me just, hypothetically, if we were to say we did nothing but reading in recess in the first 2 years of school, okay, would that be better? Would that be worse? Mm-hmm. We're not even willing to talk about whether that idea would have merit or not. We run our school days like the way we did them when I was in kindergarten, which I think was the way they were doing it when my parents were there, rather than stepping back to say, what are the most important things?
Yeah.
And I know you're not talking about this, but I think we have kids, their butts in seats way too much at young ages, and they aren't out there learning through play.
And yeah. I would say starting too early in the day. You should start a little later, but go ahead.
Oh, I don't know what to do for my call to action. I just want to have it be data-informed. And I think there's a lot of data-informed things we should think about. And I'd have to get back to our listeners on exactly what those are. But let's not just throw money at it. Let's not just pick your favorite idea. Let's go do something that is proven.
Well, we've had lots of wars over, you know, phonics and back to basics and, new literacy.
Okay, so can I go higher ed next? And I could go so many places there.
Yeah.
I listened to Fareed Zakaria the other day. He's one of my favorite thought leaders. And he mentioned that the U.S. as a percent of world total has 4% of the world's population, 25% of the world's GDP, and 72% of the world's top universities. Just, this is something we do really well. This is an ace in the hole for our country. Why are we tearing that institution down? That's
great.
My problem.
That's a great question.
Are we tearing it down, or is it tearing itself down?
Yeah, go ahead. Make your point.
So one of the key things is we have sent this message that to kids, no matter the cost, college education pays for itself. It's worthwhile. But we've done various policies that have driven up the cost, started pricing it out for the average kid, the average family, taxpayers, and the value is not there for many kids. They naively took on a bunch of debt, which isn't paying off for them. And like I said earlier, we've talked as if a college education is kind of the only true respectable education. And if you go to a tech college or something else like that, it's not. Mm-hmm. And I think this is all just kind of piled on top of itself.
Yeah.
And then you mix in the whole kind of woke agenda and stuff like that. For a lot of folks are going, I'm paying for my kid to go get what kind of education?
Yeah. You know, where I think about it is I just want you to do something post high school. I want something post-secondary because high school's not enough in this economy. And pursue your passion. Talk to the people you love and trust most to help you know what the next step is for you. But don't stop at 12th grade.
Yeah, well, I mean, I would be, this is a little different than what you're saying because I, of course, disagree a bit with John. I very much agree on the way that the cost has increased over time. A big part of that has been the ways in which different states have really cut funding to higher education. And now we're going after thought policing at all levels in across all curriculum. So I would just say that I think one of the things that I would be a huge advocate for in this space as well, which is different than what you're bringing up, is service.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think a lot of us would benefit from a year of service or 2 years of service immediately post high school, especially young men, to kind of figure out, you know, what are we ready for and then make those, you know, career decisions. But it's not part of our culture.
Yeah. Yeah.
What video game is that?
Yeah.
Hey, okay.
But Natalie, to your, I would recommend, it's not just get education after 12th grade, but become a lifelong learner.
Oh, yeah. Continuous learning. That's a great point. Okay, let's do mental health.
Okay.
How's that? Yeah. To put on, I have a quote in front of me. This is from Jonathan Haidt. He's the author of The Anxious Generation. It's making all sorts of, you know, news in the country. But he said, there's a God-shaped hole in every human heart. If it doesn't get filled with something noble and elevated, modern society will quickly pump it full of garbage.
Wow. Yeah.
And what he's basically, that's what that's supposed to signal to us, is that social media is filling this huge hole in the human heart with all this garbage that's playing havoc with our minds and with our mental health.
Yeah.
So, and I, you know, I don't have to walk through the data, but it's pretty evident to us, particularly among our children.
Yeah.
If you are raising a young family in this state, get ready to have mental health challenges.
Yep.
Get ready. It's almost ubiquitous.
Yep.
Okay. That was depressing.
That was.
Call to action?
I've got them. I got a couple.
To me, part of the dynamic is put away the phones and connect with people and serve people. That's one way that I can remember as a teenager engaging that helped.
Because
you always have struggles as a teenager and you're trying to figure out who you are, and some days it goes well and some days everybody's dumping on you at school.
Shereen, I want to hear. Haidt's point is that from 2010 to 2015, society got rewired because of ubiquitous internet and smartphones in every pocket, that sort of, and social media. And so what we're really, when you say, Shereen, put away the phones, that's really part of the solution.
That's part of the solution. I mean, I'll also say lock your guns. When we think about the really like kind of far end of this, we think about the suicide rate in our state, which still continues to be high. And one of the reasons is because of the lethality of being able to have quick and easy access to guns. So something that you can do to just in your own life, right, is if you do have guns in your home, make sure they're locked and make sure that your children don't have access to them. But I would say, kind of going back to what John said, go outside. I think this is something where my experience as a person, as a non-Mormon, as a drinker, I spend time in bars. I've met a lot of people. I spend time in third spaces where I have made a lot of friends. And I'm sure those spaces also exist, whether it's your local coffee shop or a place, a park, a place where you hang out. Meet people, talk to them, make friends. It's a good idea.
Kate, I don't know if you guys want to add one. I'll put another one on the list, water. Just generically water. And we've talked about this in earlier programs. Great Salt Lake looms large, of course, here. The future's watching. What are we doing to change human behavior when it comes to water use in this state?
Yeah. And how are we pressuring our elected leaders to meet the moment?
And how are we pricing it so people recognize the true cost?
Yeah. And I'll tell you something I've learned. It's real easy to point fingers at agriculture or farmers. And guess what? It's their water right. It's not ours. They have this right. You can't just go take it away from them. You have to work with these people to say, what would you do with that right that would turn it to a different use that you still benefit from because you have the right?
Yep.
And one idea is water leasing.
Yeah.
So
anything else?
Well, I think we still got one more minute. And I just ask, is there any other good? Let's end on a positive. And I know what I want to ask.
What part of the state do you love?
What part of the state do you love?
I love to be on the Burr Trail Road.
Okay. Burr Trail Road. Tell us quickly why.
Because it is gorgeous. It's stunning. It's not as busy as our parks. And you can go into the Singing Canyon and really have a delightful time.
I love the Alpine Loop. I live right there by American Fork Canyon, and I just love that. And I was talking to school kids a few years ago. They're like, what's your favorite part of the state? And it's like, where I live, because that canyon is just minutes away.
I'm going to go to Bluff, Utah, and be in the ancient Pueblo ruins.
Incredible.
All right. Wonderful program, everybody. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Natalie Gochner, Shireen Gorbani, John Google. Program's produced by Anthony Scoma. Thanks for listening.